Let me start with an irony. We value advocacy earnestly in leaders once they're elected. It really matters to us. It's a badge of leadership that we value greatly. Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, around here, mattered to us a lot. Abraham Lincoln, at the time of the Gettysburg Address, maybe even more importantly, the second inaugural. It was a time to pull the nation together rather than to rip it asunder. And those two addresses were probably the two most important addresses ever delivered. He didn't scream at the South at all. He tried to pull the nation back together. And we cared that he was a great advocate and that Thomas Jefferson was. It mattered. I'm not sure Britain makes it without Winston Churchill. 40 addresses. They were on the radio. They didn't have TV. We weren't in there yet.
You move forward into broad, sunlit upland. And if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of it.
We weren't even there yet. They were getting pounded every night. Churchill probably saved Britain and therefore saved us because we hadn't come in yet. His advocacy mattered. FDR really mattered. He won four times because of his oral advocacy. How about the day after Pearl Harbor? He really mattered.
President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Here's the irony. It wasn't so many months ago that it was said about who may become our next president. The son of a gun can talk, but that was almost a badge of non-infamy for that man. He can talk, but that must mean he's not substantive at all. It meant that he couldn't be substantive, that we forgot that he was also a constitutional scholar at Chicago and the president of the Harvard Law Review. That was a bad thing. Remember, it wasn't many months ago that we said that must mean he's not substantive. In campaigns, it's a put down, wasn't it? I'm not making this up. That was said all over the country. The guy can talk, it's a really bad thing. In campaigns for president of the United States, it's considered almost a bad thing, although it's a badge of important leadership to be an advocate. All right, a rhetorician. It's a negative. To be okay, here comes my thesis, there's three parts to it. Rhetoric has changed the results of elections all the way back to FDR. 80 years. Every single campaign has changed on the basis of good and horrid advocacy. Point two. The results of those elections have radically changed the course of American history. Good and bad rhetoric. So get over it, folks, that rhetoric doesn't matter. Yeah, it does. Good and bad advocacy have changed American history radically. And point three. Through the lens of those 80 years of elections has been a magnificent microcosm course in Rhetoric 101. Yes, I did major in rhetoric, all right. I'll admit it. But Rhetoric 101 can be taught, the entirety of Rhetoric 101 can be taught through the lens of those 80 years of elections. Everything you need to know has been taught through those elections. It's all right there. That's all I'm going to talk about. That's it. All right. FDR is easy. Won four times. Nobody else has ever won four times. Why? He was a great advocate. The fireside chants. The day after Pearl Harbor. He was a magnificent advocate, rhetorician. People trusted the guy. And many times he was an underdog. We forget that. He was a great advocate, FDR was, through terrible times of crisis. He was. He leaves behind, though, who? Harry Truman. Nobody wanted Harry Truman to be vice president. He was a last choice vice president, a failed haberdasher from Independence, Missouri. Had not been well known, a little funny looking guy from Independence, Missouri. They couldn't come up with anybody else, right? And he's running against Tom Dewey, very well heeled, loved by the Republican Party, 30 points ahead in the battle against Harry Truman. You don't think advocacy matters? What happened? Tom Dewey gives the same speech 47 times. It's wooden, it's stilted, it's boring, and every week Harry Truman gains with advocacy, the most underrated advocate that ever walked, I guess, 2-3 points a week. Harry gets on a train and goes around the country. There he is. Harry Truman on his train. 2-3 points a week over this well-heeled Dewey.
We are proud of our record.
The haberdasher. Give him hell, Harry. There's the... Nobody thinks he's going to win. He's funny. He's self-deprecating. This is the night after he wins. You don't think advocacy matters? Yeah, it did. There went a major election. All right, let's go to the next one. Eisenhower, 5-star general, 34th president. He's up against a magnificent, on one level, advocate, Adlai. Very bright guy. But he lost two elections to Eisenhower. What happened? What happened? Changed American history again for 8 years. That's what happened. Eisenhower, not a great rhetorician, all right, okay. I'm not saying the rhetoric of the god of rhetoric always wins, but we like the guy. Ethos. I, like Ike, trumped the eloquent public speaker, but he was too highfalutin. Out of touch, too intellectual. Aristotle wrote it in the rhetoric. strange words, compound words, and invented words must be used sparingly. That's what Aristotle tried to teach us. Here, a book just came out. I urge everybody to read this book, Drew Weston, The Political Brain. The gut level reaction to a candidate is three times as powerful as the reason people give for preferring a candidate. People vote for the person who elicits the right feeling, not who gives the best argument. People liked Ike. They liked him better than Stevenson. It's classic rhetoric. They loved the guy. He won a war for us. Eisenhower won because of classic rhetoric stuff, the concept of ethos. Stevenson, one of the greatest speakers imaginable, so bright. But ethos will usually trump logos and pathos. There's Stevenson. Listen to the guy. Eloquent, yeah. But they loved Ike. It's classic rhetoric stuff. Ethos is the most important of the rules of classic rhetoric. Let's go to the next one. Kennedy. The guy has no reason to be president of the United States. He had not had a distinguished record as a senator. He's a Catholic. At that time, that is believed to be a major problem. The Democrats don't even want him to run because he had not had a distinguished record in the Senate and because the Catholic problem is believed to be a problem at that time. Here comes the son of a gun. Oh my gosh, is he an advocate, though. Does advocacy matter? Here he comes.
There are many people.
This is the Berlin Wall speech.
Who really don't understand.
Can he talk?
Of course they don't. What is the great issue between the free world and the communist world? Let them come to Berlin. There are some who say that communism is the wave of the future. Let them come to Berlin. And there are some who say in Europe and elsewhere we can work with the communists. Let them come to Berlin. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world.
The inaugural speech.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
What he and his speechwriter had studied was classic rhetoric. Cicero refrains. They had studied and studied and studied the power of classic rhetoric. People will listen to stories and refrains, and they will respond to them. Ask not, let them come to Berlin. And so we voted for him over overwhelming odds. Nixon was overwhelmingly preferred by his party. He had all the advantages of a huge war chest. Kennedy didn't, but he beat him because he was a fabulous advocate. They go to the debate. Nixon is wiping his chin. He is sweating like mad. He's got a 5 o'clock shadow. And there goes Kennedy. People were just charmed by his, with no advantages at all. No financial advantages. No party advantages. Nixon had all that. Advocacy. Did it change American history? Yeah. You bet it did. Let's go to the next one. Johnson comes in, blood on his shirt after the Kennedy assassination. He paints Goldwater as a guy whose finger you don't want on the nuclear button, and I'll prove that to you in just a minute. I am stable, I am strong, I am powerful as an advocate. Trust me, that other guy is probably going to start a nuclear war, and I'll prove that to you in just a minute through his ads. You can't trust that other guy. He's a cowboy. He has a loose cannon. Yeah, that was his advocacy. The other guy's a loose cannon. And this guy wins a landslide. That was his whole point of advocacy. Why does this guy lose, Humphrey? Because that night on the TV, the 1968 convention, Humphrey's doing pretty well. I actually happened to be there, as my wife and daughter, who were sitting both there and there, know. Outside the convention that night, when Humphrey's getting the Democratic nomination, this happens outside the convention, planned by Jerry Rubin. The cops are beating up the protesters who have been throwing blood and a lot of other things I'd rather not talk about. And this happens. And for that day forward, for 20 years, the Republicans are able to picture the Democrats as completely out of control. Sex, drugs, that becomes the argument they make for 20 years. They're completely out of control. It's the party without discipline because of what happened that night. That's the end, as a matter of advocacy, of Humphrey and the Democratic Party for a long time. They're out of control. Sex, drugs. Advocacy, yeah, it is advocacy. That picture doomed Humphrey and the Democratic Party. Advocacy some more. Ed Muskie is ahead. Ed Muskie is ahead. The Manchester Guardian does some very mean attack. Manchester Guardian is a pretty tough newspaper. They attack his wife. And Ed Muskie, on a November night, goes outside in a snowstorm and breaks out in a cascade of tears. And there went his campaign. He just lost it. There went the whole campaign. Advocacy, that's a form of advocacy. He just plain lost it when Jane Muskie was attacked. I like to contrast that as a matter of advocacy, and everybody in this room may have a different view about. We used to say in my advocacy class that when a man shows a molecule of a tear, it's probably a good thing for a man, because we don't think a man will ever do that. Probably a good thing. And when a woman does that or more, it's a terrible thing. Oh my God, she's hysterical. Yeah, we expected that. That's terrible. It's a sexism problem for a woman. In a way, this is the counter story. Muskie's campaign was dead the next morning. There's no doubt about it. Completely over. I don't know. Y'all will have your own view. How about Hillary the day that I think a lot of us think Hillary, who was perceived as too cold, just plain too cold, kind of lost it about a week before the New Hampshire campaign. Didn't lose it totally. She didn't lose control, but she welled up a little bit and said, I'm really trying as hard as I can, but this is hard. I feel strongly about this campaign, and she welled up. And she won a surprising victory in New Hampshire. I bet we could take a show of hands here, and we might be 50-50. On whether that helped her or hurt her, whether that was faked or not. I personally don't think it was faked. I think it probably helped that particular woman to show that feeling of emotion. It's the exact opposite of what we've kind of been teaching in our class, that it's a good thing for a man occasionally to show emotion, and a woman better watch out for it as an almost unfair thing that a woman needs to watch out for. My view is it crushed him, and maybe it helped her, but we might disagree about that. But is it advocacy stuff? Yeah, it is. Let's go to this guy. Next one. Carter wins the first time because he's perceived ethos-wise. And let me say a few more words about classical rhetoric. There are five pieces to it. Ethos, pathos, logos. Ethos, trust me, like me, I'm credible. Pathos, I can project emotion, but it better be real emotion, and you better not think I'm cheating. If you think I'm cheating or overdoing it or totally in the grip of emotion, it's going to backfire. It's going to backfire every time. Logos. People love logic, but it better be simple, clear, Aristotelian, Aristotle, simple logic, major premise, minor premise, conclusion. Aristotle, simple logic. Delivery, meaning cadence, voice, body language, gestures, word choice. Those are the five canons of the gods of rhetoric teaching. Carter is the most monotone guy that ever lived, but people believed that he was a moral, straight-shooting, ethos guy. So he won against Dole. You kind of like the guy. Straight shooter. But then what happened? Carter ran up. Look at how monotone he is. It's the most monotone face and voice I ever saw in my life. But he won once. He beat Dole. Look at that face. Then he ran up against that guy. Look at this. When he's asked if he's too old to run for president, remember what happened? That happened.
I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience.
That's when he ran against Mondale, but he used the same charm, the same ethos, pathos, against both Carter and Mondale, and he was irresistible. People just liked him. He was a charming guy. One way to ask the ethos question, would you like to go to dinner with the guy? An awful lot of people said, yeah. Whatever they thought about his politics, yeah, I'd like to go to dinner with that guy, nice guy. And so he won big time over both of these guys with just an overwhelming ethos appeal and some pathos appeal. People just liked him. Are we back to rhetoric and are we back to advocacy? Sure. Did it change American history? Yeah. He should not have run for president, for God's sakes. The Republicans thought he was a grade B actor. They didn't want to run him for president. The Republicans did not want to run him. He came from nowhere because people just liked him. And he overwhelmed the people they wanted to run, the Republicans, because he just kept overwhelming the candidates they propped up. Let's go to the next one. Dukakis is up 30 points early by the second debate, and we've only got 8 weeks to go. Dukakis is up 9 points over Bush. It's almost insurmountable. But he's got two problems. One is people think he's an automaton. He doesn't have any heart. He's smart. He knows government, but he doesn't care about anything enough to express any conviction. There's no pathos there at all. Two, he's unalterably opposed to the death penalty, and 66%, the polls say, won't go that far. A lot of people don't like it much, but they would never say never about the death penalty. But he would. Bernie Shaw, CNN News, gets asked the first question, second debate. Suppose Kitty Dukakis, your wife of 35 years, and whom he's greatly in love, has just been raped and murdered. Now what do you think about the death penalty, Governor? How do you feel about that? And here's what happened. And there went the election.
If you favor an irrevocable death penalty for the cure.
No, I don't, Bernard, and I think you know that I opposed the death penalty during all of my life. I don't see any evidence that this should be a deterrent, and I think there are better and more effective ways to deal with violent crime. We've done so in my own state. It's one of the reasons why we have had the biggest drop in crime in any industrial state in America, why we have the lowest murder rate in any industrial state in America. But we have work to do in this nation. We have work to do to fight a real war, not a funny war against drugs, and that's something I want to lead, something we haven't had over the course of the past many years, even though the Vice President has been, at least allegedly, in charge of that war. We have much to do to step up that war, to double the number of drug enforcement agents, to fight both here and abroad, to work with our neighbors in this hemisphere. And I want to call a hemispheric summit just as soon after the 20th of January as possible to fight that war. But we also have to deal with drug education prevention here at home.
Remember the question? That answer went on for 6 minutes. The rules of the debate were, and I didn't show you the whole thing, supposed to go for 3 minutes. He was interrupted 3 times to shut up, and he would not do so. What could have happened? Do you think he was tired? And his handler said at some point tonight, it was the first question, at some point tonight, let's talk about drugs coming in from South America. And he said to himself, here's the perfect opportunity. My wife has just been raped and murdered. Let's do South American drugs now. Think about it. What could have happened? Well, it didn't work very well. By the next morning, he was up 9 before, he's down 5, and he never recovered. He never mentioned her name, for heaven's sakes, right? He never mentioned her name. And there went a presidency. If he wins, and he's up 9, there go both Bushes. Think about it, folks. How does George Bush Jr. win? And George Bush Sr. doesn't. You have just radically changed American history, Phil. Just answer the doggone question, right? Let's grade him. Let's grade ethos. Do you like him better than before he answered the question? Is it possible to say, I may not vote for him, but I just like the son of a gun better than before? How about pathos? Why didn't he say, I want to rip that son of a gun from stem to stern? But my view is that what civilization is about is stopping it. How about logos? What if he says, in Kansas, you get the death penalty. In Nebraska, you don't. 1 mile across the state line. 17 international treaties have gone down the toilet because other countries disagree with us. We have 17 major studies, 1,000 pages long, that say there is an inherent bias against blacks because of bias against blacks, 17 of them. And those really bother me. We're up to 120 men, and they've all been men, that have been killed by the state, where DNA evidence now shows they didn't do it. Every constitution of every state and of this country says the job of the government is to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You are free to disagree with me, and people of goodwill do. I read the polls. I think that the government has more exalted tasks than lobbing cyanide into the jail cells of prisoners. That is my belief. I'm sticking with it. you're free to vote against me. But I believe it. You've just changed American history if he gives that answer. And I just did it in 61 seconds. There go both Bushes. I believe. Let's go to Clinton. Clinton has no reason to be president of the United States, at least then. He gave a horrible speech 4 years before at the Democratic Convention. He went on for an hour and 40 minutes. It was a horrible speech. Everybody agrees. He's from a tiny state. He's not highly regarded at the time. But he is one fabulous speaker. He is one great advocate, and here comes Clinton with advocacy and rhetoric. Look at him when he debates Bush. Look at Bush's face when you watch this. What are you going to do with this guy?
I see people in my state, middle class people, their taxes have gone up in Washington and their services have gone down, while the wealthy have gotten tax cuts. I have seen what's happened in this last 4 years. When in my state, when people lose their jobs, there's a good chance I'll know them by their names. When a factory closes, I know the people who ran it. When the businesses go bankrupt, I know them. And I've been out here for 13 months, meeting in meetings just like this, ever since October, with people like you all over America, people that have lost their jobs, lost their livelihood, lost their health insurance. What I want you to understand is the national debt is not the only cause of that. It is because America has not invested in its people. It is because we have not grown. It is because we've had 12 years of trickle-down economics. We've gone from first to 12th in the world in wages. We've had 4 years where we produced no private sector jobs. Most people are working harder for less money than they were making 10 years ago. It is because we are in the grip of a failed economic theory. And this decision you're about to make better be about what kind of economic theory you want. Not just people saying, I want to go fix it, but what are we going to do? I think we have to do is invest in American jobs, American education, control American health care costs to bring the American people together again.
If that isn't deer in the headlights, I don't know what it is. What do you do with this guy? And he didn't do much with him. Go to the next one. Al Gore, then and now. This is the debate against Bush. Watch what he did. First debate, he's meaner than a hornet, Gore is. Watch this.
But can you get things done?
I lost the very end of this. We simply lost it. He goes up to him, he leaves his dais, and puts his finger in his face, and I lost the finger in the face. Second debate, he's a pussycat, because his handlers told him to change everything. Look at the new Gore. What if he'd been this? He barely lost. All he had to do was win New Mexico, Tennessee, New Hampshire, or Florida, which he actually did win. What if he was this? What if he was this Gore? Just has to win one of those. The others he only lost by 2,000 votes apiece. How about this Gore?
The consensus is that we are causing global warming. I am Al Gore. I used to be the next president of the United States of America. This is Patagonia, 75 years ago, and the same glacier today. This is Mount Kilimanjaro, 30 years ago, and last year. Within the decade, there will be no more snows of Kilimanjaro.
This is really not a political issue so much as a moral issue.
Advocacy matters. Yeah. Dean? Dean's ahead. He loses Iowa. My wife calls me. I'm on the road and says it's all over. I didn't even see this happen. You saw this.
Not only are we going to New Hampshire, Tom Larkin, we're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. We're going to California and Texas and New York. We're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Aristotle said, watch out for pathos. Do you want somebody who's lost control? Do you want that finger on the nuclear button? Answer, no, the next morning. All right, watch out. John Kerry. John Kerry has Obama's speechwriter, 27-year-old guy who wrote a brilliant acceptance speech at the convention. It was every paragraph led off with, you don't value families by, ribbing on the Republican theme of valuing families. Then a giant pause in which he was supposed to do a big pause, and that's the choice in this election. Any great speaker would have paused and probably gotten the fans out there, the thousand of them, on their feet, probably doing, yes, we can. That's the choice in this election. Pause, done something, maybe started off low, a little higher, something. Any great speaker would have milked the pants off of that. That's the choice in this election. Watch what he does with it.
You don't value your families.
Listen to this. Nobody would have done this.
You don't value your families. You don't value families by kicking kids out of after-school programs and taking cops off the streets so that Enron can get another tax break. We believe in the family value of caring for our children and protecting the neighborhoods where they walk and they play. And that is the choice in this election. You don't value families by denying real prescription drug coverage
Nothing.
To seniors so big drug companies can get another windfall profit. We believe in the family value expressed in one of the oldest commandments, honor thy father and thy mother. As president, I will not privatize Social Security. I will not cut benefits. And together, we will make sure that senior citizens never have to cut their bills in half because they can't afford life-saving medicine. And that is a choice in this election. You don't value families.
He's fighting with us. He's fighting with the crowd. He's literally stopping them. Oh my gosh. There's another kind of advocacy. It's not just the spoken word. Increasingly, and we all know this, hundreds of million dollars are spent on political ads, and they influence people, and we know it. Let me go through some. Theme one is just mean. Maybe you like some of them. Some of them are just flat out mean. The Swift Boat attack on Kerry, who really did fight a lot and was going up and down rivers in Vietnam. The Swift Boat attack on Kerry. You're not a patriot at all, from people who weren't there. All right, that influenced a lot of votes, and he barely lost. Another theme, calm. I'm a calm guy. That was consistent with Reagan ethos. Trust me, life will be good. You'll like me. Classic, I think maybe a lot of people think this might have been the most effective ad in the history of television. Trust me, life's gonna be good. I'm a calm guy.
It's morning again in America. Today, more men and women will go to work than ever before in our country's history. With interest rates at about half the record highs of 1980, nearly 2,000 families today will buy new homes, more than at any time in the past 4 years. This afternoon, 6,500 young men and women will be married. And with inflation at less than half of what it was just 4 years ago, they can look forward with confidence to the future. It's morning again in America. And under the leadership of President Reagan, our country is prouder and stronger and better. Why would we ever want to return to where we were less than 4 short years ago?
Be a pretty hard ad to run right now, but it was very effective then. Here's the toughest ad in the history of American politics. I'm looking at David right now. You will remember this. This is as tough as it gets. Some of you won't believe this actually ran. Watch this one.
children can live are to go into the dark. We must either love each other or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
Was run all over the country. I told you before he was going to go after Goldwater as a gunslinging cowboy. That was run hundreds of thousands of times. Biggie. What was this one? I guess it was a fear ad. Certainly the last one was a fear ad. Was this 3 o'clock guy?
It's 3
I guess it was. Fear.
Your vote will decide who answers that call. Whether it's someone who already knows the world's leaders, knows the military, someone tested and ready to lead in a dangerous world. It's 3 a.m. and your children are safer to sleep. Who do you want answering the phone?
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
I personally perceived that just as a fear ad. Some of my students said they saw some racism in that ad. I didn't see it. Little white kids in their bed. One smart aleck student in my class said at the time Bill Clinton was very active in the campaign, I know what she would say, Bill, it's for you. There were lots of comments about it. I don't know. I guess it was a fear ad. Certainly racism, big in the ads. Willie Horton against Dukakis. This is one of the most famous ads ever run. Willie Horton had been furloughed.
Bush and Dukakis on crime.
Look at the hair on the guy they chose, for instance.
Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy...
That's not even his name, by the way.
But despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
That was very famous ad. Harold Ford, very famous, not running for president, running for senator, very famous, and I lost the very end of this.
Terrorists need their privacy.
When I die, Harold Ford will let me pay taxes again.
Ford's right. I do have too many guns.
I met Harold at the Playboy party.
I'd love to pay higher marriage taxes.
Canada can take care of North Korea. They're not busy.
So he took money from corn moving producers. I mean, who hasn't?
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Again, I lost the sound of the very end of that. Harold Ford and his opponent, and Harold Ford lost by 1.5 points, both had fundraisers at a Playboy Club in Tennessee, and what she's saying at the very end, I lost the sound, was this sexy white babe, and he's a black guy. Harold, call me. At the very end, and I lost the sound on it. We're trying to find it. All right, does it matter? All this advocacy stuff. What if we corrected for advocacy bias and threw out all the outliers? Let's assume everybody was pretty good, equal, in the last 80 years since FDR. Does it matter? Yeah, none of those guys would have been president. At least when they became president. Eisenhower desperately didn't want to run, desperately. Begged them not to make him run. They said, well, if you don't run, either Truman or Adlai's going to win. He'd been a general. He wanted out. They begged him, begged him, begged him. Books have been written about how badly he didn't want to run. Kennedy, the Democrats didn't want him to run. He'd had a horrible career. Reagan? No, the Republicans didn't want him to run. Grade B actor. He is 20 points down. All Dukakis has to do is run reasonably well, even at the very end. He's 9 points up. He's just got to answer the death penalty question. Clinton, horrible speech 4 years before. The Democrats don't want him to run. Anybody in this room thinks that Bush is going to win if the first Bush doesn't win? No. Yeah, advocacy has changed all those elections, good and horrid advocacy. Explain all of those results. Does it matter? Yeah. darn right it does. With some political science professor help, I've done charts. We can all debate, we could debate this forever. What would the charts look like if you took out the outliers and just corrected for advocacy bias? It would look something. This is what we have had over on the left. If you corrected for outliers, advocacy bias, and just assumed everybody was pretty good. Nobody was great. Nobody was horrible. It would look a little something like that on the left and on the right. Does it matter to American history? Well, we could also argue this for 100 hours. We'd probably been out of Vietnam earlier, yeah. We'd probably have greater tax parity, yeah. Heaven knows we'd had a different Supreme Court majority. Take out the two Bushes, which is the easiest thing to take out. Earlier environmental urgency, yeah, probably. Probably wouldn't be in Iraq. Take out Cheney and Bush and you're out of Iraq, yeah. Let's go to this election. All right, here's what we started with. Right, that's about the team. What happened there? Probably ethos and pathos. Got in awful late, didn't seem to be very interested. Lazy. Had an awful lot of trouble changing his positions. People had trouble with the positions. The anger that he had before he got in, did a very good job on 9/11, but an awful lot of trouble with his earlier marriage. And the anger he showed to the press earlier on, that's probably an ethos and pathos problem. There he went. Again, trouble changing positions. Again, that's probably an ethos problem there. Very nice guy. Came out of absolutely nowhere. Very strong on ethos. Very, very strong on ethos. But came out maybe a pathos problem because so many people couldn't quite go as far as he could with his religion. And there he went probably on pathos and not very well known before he ran. $400 haircut, cut, I guess. Maybe probably too much of a one-trick pony because he was so anti-corporations all the time. There was so much of that constant attack. And later in life, there came out, later in his campaign, there came out some marital issues, of course, but that came out late. Hillary, polls were showing 45%, just plain didn't trust her on Bosnia and other things, and a coldness problem that a lot of people perceive, but very smart, very strong on logos. So we came down to those two, didn't we? Advocacy-wise, I like to show this. I do believe in advocacy, as you can tell from everything I have said. I like to contrast, and I actually started making this presentation 2 days after New Hampshire. The night of New Hampshire. McCain has just won New Hampshire when I started making this presentation, has just won it. He was kind of expected to win it, but he did. It should have been a night of great celebration for him. Obama, surprisingly, very surprisingly, has just lost. Just as a matter of advocacy, watch the difference between the two. McCain, the winner.
But what government is expected to do, it must do with competence, resolve, and wisdom. In recent years, we have lost the trust of the people who share our principles, but doubt our own allegiance to them. I seek the nomination of our party to restore that trust, to return our party to the principles that have never failed Americans.
As an advocate, he read every word, and he misread some of them. That's not great as an advocate. Obama's just lost. One of my students last year was with him when he lost that night. And they had no idea what he was going to do. They felt horrible because they had been up, they thought, 10 points. And he went out, and he didn't have any notes. And he did this.
It was the call of workers who organized, women who reached for the ballot, a president who chose the moon as our new frontier, and a king who took us to the mountaintop and pointed the way to the promised land. Yes, we can, to justice and equality. Well, does advocacy matter? A few more words about what's happened in the last couple of weeks, and I really would just take my text here, not from me. I do have my own views about the advocacy of who's done the best job, but I really just take my text from conservative commentators now that I heard on Fox yesterday and have been watching on the news, the Chris Buckleys, the George Wills, the Krauthammers, the David Brooks, the Colin Powells, the Kathleen Parkers, the Crystals, the Noonans. The New York Times, huge article yesterday. I do believe, and this is just me, and it doesn't matter to any of you, I think there have been too many flips and starts in the advocacy from one side of too many fits and starts. And what the heck is the theme from the one side? And I do think it's at least worth reading the giant 10,000 word piece in the New York Times of how many different themes that have come and gone from the one side, and what the heck is their theme. And I think they can't win. I don't think they can win. I don't think it was helpful. No, she didn't. She was for it. She was against it after the Senate Appropriations Committee had already killed it and they kept the $200 million. As an advocacy coach, I don't think that was at all helpful. I don't think saying that Barack Obama was in favor of comprehensive sex education.
Mark on education, that he's elusive on accountability, a staunch defender of the existing public school monopoly. Obama's one accomplishment? Legislation to teach comprehensive sex education to kindergartners. Learning about sex before learning to read? Barack Obama, wrong on education, wrong for your family.
Comprehensive sex education blew up on them when he was talking about trying to teach kindergartens the difference between good and bad touching. Blew up, in my opinion, on them. I think that was bad stuff. And I think they needed a comprehensive advocacy platform that I think has blown up, and I think they can't win. And I think advocacy has blown up on them. I come to Rhetoric 101. I only have four more minutes. Rhetoric 101, what has been the teaching of all of this? And here is what I think it does teach. For Truman. Truman was an Aristotle story. Plain speak trumped the fancy. Self-deprecating humor did work. Eisenhower, ethos trumped the highfalutin. Kennedy, absolutely superb delivery did matter. The power of humor, which he was fabulous at, making fun of himself and his family. Themes and refrains, that's the teaching of Cicero and Demosthenes. Johnson, pathos, our gut response to perceived strength of his and the fears on over-reliance on emotions, the fear of his opponent. That's Aristotle and Thucydides. Humphrey, he got killed by pathos. We feared chaos, the streets, what we saw in the streets. Reagan, ethos, we loved him. Pathos, we respond to evokers of the calm, the warm feelings. He loved to tell stories, we liked it, Aristotle. Dukakis, ethos and pathos killed him. He failed on everything. We're revolted by the blasé. Gore, ethos and logos killed him. We're put off by inconsistency in manner and logic. Aristotle, Cicero, and Quintilian all taught us that. Clinton, ethos and pathos, he was great at it. Distinguished delivery counts. Stories and themes are important. Cicero and Demosthenes taught us that. Dean, pathos killed him. Watch out for overdoing it. He scared us. Aristotle, carry pathos, ethos. Powerlessness, he didn't have a theme to his campaign. Lack of themes killed him. It's the old story of Churchill sending back that pudding when he said to the waiter, take this pudding back, it has no theme. I don't want it. That's what Churchill said. That's the story of the teaching of the gods of rhetoric. Every single campaign has come down to it. I may be wrong, and if I'm wrong about this campaign, you can find me in an old folks' home somewhere in Tahiti in about 10 days. Thank you for listening.